and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, Commonwealth North's Eric Wolforth and Cheryl Fraska, as study group co-chairs, present Commonwealth North's 2015 report, The State's Operating Budget, Critical Crossroads, Choices, and Opportunities. This talk was recorded at the Hilton Anchorage on February 25th, the same day the report was released. Commonwealth North President Marianne Pease moderated the discussion.
I would like to take this opportunity as Commonwealth North's new president to say welcome and thank you so much for joining us here today as we embark upon a new year of premier public policy discussions and reports. We are here as our mission states, illuminating Alaska's issues. As many of you know, we have a very active membership, which is engaged in action coalitions and study groups that gather and work for months to produce reports that have an impact on Alaska's future, or at least we hope they have an impact on Alaska's future. I sincerely hope that one important takeaway from today's meeting is that you could make an impact, that we as Alaskans have a responsibility to guide our policy leaders towards the best future of our great state. We share an optimistic view of the future, but we all have to be informed and engaged to make a difference. I will now turn the program over to Cheryl Fraska and Eric Wolforth. They are the study group co-chairs that have worked together tirelessly on the fiscal policy study group. Today, Commonwealth North will officially release our report on the state's operating budget. This 56-page report is the result of almost 6 months of deliberative discussions and presentations within our fiscal policy study group. With Commonwealth North's long commitment to a sound state fiscal policy, and the state faced with a daunting gap between revenues and spending, Commonwealth North's Fiscal Policy Study Group was charged with an examination of the state's operating budget to identify recommendations to help reduce state spending. Over the years, our previous studies have focused very much on the revenue side of the ledger. And what we have learned along the way is it is not enough to just address revenue. Instead, a thoughtful approach to right-sizing government is necessary. It's an uncomfortable conversation for many, but critical if Alaska is to ensure choices and opportunities today and into the future. Thank you again for your participation here today. And now, Cheryl and Eric, please take it away.
Thank you very much, Marianne. This report, which you now have before you, may be the timeliest that this entity has ever produced. When we started our work in September, you all know what oil prices were. You know what they are now. We zeroed in on the state operating budget, the state operating budget itself, leaving revenue sources for another report in another day. The thought there was we could give the most productive and useful information by zeroing in on the operating budget. The work started, as I indicated, in December. And on Appendix D of the back, you'll see a list of the speakers and presentations that we informed our work from August 28th, 2014 to January 15, some 10 or more presentations from budget officers of the state, legislators, and others informing the four study groups which were created to deal with our state's budget crisis. Those four study groups were communications, personnel cost containment, legislative procedures, and agency evaluations. Each subgroup issued its report, and those reports were amalgamated into the document which you have before you today, and which I think will become, I think, one of the most, if not the most, timely and important reports that Commonwealth North has produced. Without further ado, I give you the chair-elect and really the laboring oar as co-chair of this report to present it to you, Cheryl Frasca.
Okay, thank you, Eric. And first, the reports, you'll pick them up as you're leaving today. Of course, we did that so you wouldn't read it while we were talking. You know, we're not dumb. Okay, so the first thing we want to talk about is, as Eric mentioned, about why did you just study the operating budget? And I got to tell you, in terms of our study group's dynamics, folks always wanted to move over and talk about what other people ought to be paying for state services, which certainly is an appropriate discussion to have at a point in time. But we really talked about the operating budget and focused in there because of the recurring obligations that it includes in terms of the costs of services that Alaskans use every day of the year. So because of that and its size, it's about, I think, $6 billion, we thought it was important to really sort of zero in on, well, what are some of the cost drivers? What's the nature of the spending? And come up with some recommendations and ideas about the way the legislature administration might approach the issues and challenges differently than they have in the past because of this new paradigm. So, and the other fact was that the operating budget has increased over 100% over 10 years. And during that period of time, inflation increased about 30% and population increased about 11%. So there needed to be more to the story that we wanted to find out in further understanding the dynamics of the operating budget. And if you've ever been down in Juneau, had any opportunity to work around that process, the budget process, I'm sure you felt the impact of the strong lobby that is in place to protect every dollar that's in that budget. And that ranges from certainly the departments that want to protect their programs to local cities, school boards want to protect the funds that they receive from the state, as well as service providers, those that benefit from services. So it's a big hurdle to overcome because of their effectiveness in promoting current and more spending. And the other fact of the matter is there's limited public scrutiny of the budget other than the bottom line numbers. You know, reports, news reports, it's complicated if you go beyond the summary sheet. And for that reason, we wanted to, again, go into a little bit more looking at the moving parts. And the other piece of this, frankly, is that Eric had mentioned that there'll likely be a discussion about the revenue side of this, but there was a strong sense that Alaskans want to make certain that before they have to start personally contributing to spending through their taxes and other four-letter words, that they want some assurance that, in fact, the services that the state is providing are appropriate and the state's doing it well. So that's when to move over to the revenue side of the discussion. So in terms of the bottom line recommendations, which we'll then talk about how we got there and some of the other details behind the ideas, is that all programs and spending must be truly examined for the results being delivered and the value of the dollars being spent. So first thing, all programs, not just some programs, all programs. Number two, all current revenues need to be on the table and available to support the highest and best use. And we'll talk about these in more detail. And then number three is reform or change some of the budget practices that are in place that inhibit doing one and two. So we may be stating the obvious about how to approach it, but we'll get into some of the details. And first, though, a little budget 101. In terms of where the state gets its funding in a very macro level to pay for state services. As you can see from the chart, in terms of all revenue sources, about almost $12 billion go in to fund the current year budget. Okay, of that, 17% is federal receipts. Unrestricted general fund, you know, there's all these little technical words, unrestricted general funds, that's about 48%. What's categorized as designated general funds, 6%, and then other state funds, 29%. And we'll talk about the significance of those in a little bit, why they matter. So in terms of what it's spent on, in the current fiscal year. This was the budget that was approved, not any additional funds allocated this session. So about $6 billion in general funds. That was that one slice of the pie in the revenue side. Of that, about half of it goes to what's agency operations. Those are things like department programs, troopers, running the prisons, grants to nonprofits in the health Department of Health and Social Services. Formula programs, that would be things like K through 12 funding. Formula programs whose funding is determined by a formula. Medicaid funding. That's about 37% of the budget. And then statewide operations. And that tends to be things like programs that, expenditures that don't fit into a specific department. Film tax credits, oil and gas tax credits, debt service, things like that. So again, that's another way of dissecting the slice of the pie. Okay, so the first thing we said, well, that, you know, go back to the slide of our bottom line, we need to look at all programs, including formula programs. If you've ever talked to legislators, you often will hear, well, you know, we can't touch those formula programs, we got to take that off the table. Well, that was what, some 37% of the entire budget, of the operating budget. So it's important that those programs also be examined to see if they're appropriate and being effective at the reasons for which they were set up. And certainly K through 12 funding is an example of a formula program that does get a lot of scrutiny. Some may differ about how much scrutiny, if it should be more or less, but it is scrutinized and evaluated every year. But you can see that in Department of Health and Social Services, there's almost $1 billion in state funds that are spent on Medicaid and other formula-driven programs, then education, then commerce, $45 million. That includes the Power Cost Equalization Program. Department of Administration and Military and Veterans Affairs, those are two retirement-related, primarily two retirement-related programs. So again, you know, everything on the table, the entire, all programs need to be evaluated. Again, are they appropriate and being done effectively. So in addition to saying formula programs need to be on the table, we also looked at cost drivers. You know, why is the has the budget increased over that the 10 years over 100%? And so obviously one that's been in the newspaper of late is about expanding Medicaid. Well, we didn't even go there. That's not even a subject of discussion for our group, really. Instead, we just looked at, well, how much are we currently spending on Medicaid, and what are the cost drivers there? And so you can see that we have both mandatory services under Medicaid as well as optional services under Medicaid. We were told that the state of Alaska is one of the few states that provides all optional services. Yes, we get some federal funds for it, but it also does require some state funds too. So again, we were concerned about the increase over time. In fact, the next chart shows you can see the increase. The light blue bars, tops of the bars, are the federal funds, and the dark blue is the cost in state funds. You know, the increase over since 2000 is displayed in this chart. Our recommendation here is that Alaska to get underway some Medicaid reform actions that have been recommended over time but never fully deployed. We're one of the few states that in fact has not taken any of these reforms in order to save money, still provide the services to those that need them, but please try to save some money so that it can help with the state's fiscal challenges. And then again, that all formula programs must be reviewed in terms of their policy goals, cost effectiveness. So again, talking about the cost drivers. So then the other thing that bubbled up, and Dave Morgan's here, our healthcare guy, we talked a lot about the cost of healthcare in Alaska. And this was from a commission, Alaska Healthcare Commission, a report that had a consultant that compared Alaska's costs to comparable states, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Wyoming, and North Dakota. And what they found is that in Alaska, our costs are significantly higher than these comparable states, from 30% for healthcare premiums. And certainly you, if you're an employer, you feel this too. Commercial hospital reimbursement, 37% higher. Average hospital costs, 38% higher. Physician reimbursement, 50% higher. And so these costs also drive the increases in certainly Medicaid, but also in the cost of the health care that the state provides in its budget or pays for in its budget. And in fact, if you add the Medicaid costs in this current year's budget plus these costs, it's over $1.6 billion in the state's operating budget that is paying for health care related costs. So we've got the Medicaid money plus retirees, full disclosure, I'm one of them, but Medicare will take over pretty soon. Retirees, 492 million, active employees, 372 million, inmates, 44 million, and workers' comp claims, 27 million. So again, those high costs in Alaska continue to drive up these costs. And in fact, a couple of years ago, Commissioner Holtberg from the Department of Administration, she provided this information to the Healthcare Commission that we had referenced earlier, and it charted how much healthcare costs for active employees had increased over time from 2003 to 2012. And in fact, since 2012, it's increased another 46% for a total of 218% increase in the cost of active employees' healthcare costs since the year 2003, 218%. So we looked a little bit more into that, and in addition to the high cost of healthcare, what's another dynamic that's going on? And this again is from Commissioner Holtberg's presentation. And so it shows the amount that employers, private employers, public employers, and then the state pay towards the cost of their employees' health care. And again, this is from 2012, so it's a little bit old, but gives you a sense of what's the dynamics. Private employers on the left, employees pay about $4,500, employers about almost $11,000 towards the cost of their coverage. Public employers, about $3,400 employees pay, the employers pay. The employees pay, and $12,400 the employer. But for the state of Alaska, for its employees, the employer pays the entire amount. State employees do not contribute toward the cost of their health care. So that led to, well, what else, what other salary and benefit related costs are there? And if any of you have worked for the state, you know that each year you might get a what's called a merit increase or a step increase, which is usually about 2.5-3%. But the collective bargaining agreements also provide for, in this current fiscal year, a 1% cost of living adjustment. So the cost of those is about $53 million in this current year budget. For next year, the budget the legislature is working on right now, the COLA for the larger unions is about 2.5%. Not is about, is 2.5%. And then again, the merit increases would also kick in as well. So our recommendation here is that it's appropriate for the administration and the unions to go back to the negotiating table and relook at, given the new fiscal paradigm, look at, can the state continue to afford the provisions that were negotiated a couple of years ago? And so I know that'll be a big hit with some. So, but it's appropriate, we think. Okay. So that's sort of on the spending side. But then we also, related to spending, but kind of talking a little bit about revenues, is Alaska has a budget practice of what I would describe as earmarks on the revenue side. Some have described this kind of spending as off budget. You may have heard that term. But in fact, all spending is actually appropriated through the budget bill. And Alaska's constitution prohibits dedicated funds. All right, I think there's only one, the public school trust fund, but for the most part, no dedicated funds. So Alaska has come up with a practice of having designated funds, okay, not dedicated, they're designated. And so this gets into the way in which you present budget information. There's a number of fund sources, which we'll get to a little bit more, and then also designated reserves. Again, not dedicated, designated. So pie chart. Made me remember the pie chart when we talked about the fund sources. And there was a little slice of the pie that was called designated general funds. And it's kind of like they've set up these little buckets or built fences around certain fund sources that kind of protect them. They could talk about them, but because they have limited time, they tend not to. So they have a bucket called designated general funds, and that bucket has about $770 million in it. And those are things like occupational licensing fees. If you're a hairdresser and you get your license, you pay that. It's things like tuition revenue for the university, marine highway fares, and other user fees. Okay, so those are the designated general funds. And so then there's another bucket called other state funds, and that's $3.1 billion in that other state fund bucket. And that tends to be a little bit more technical and may have some limitations on if those funds could be available to support other purposes, but it includes things like the corporation activities, the permanent fund corporation, its operations, not the dividends. Well, those are other, but anyway, ADA, AHFC, okay, so those kinds of other state funds. And our point here is that those have all been cornered off. Even when we looked at that chart, if people talk about spending, they tend to talk about only the GFs, the general fund, pure general funds chart, section of the pie. They don't talk about the spending under these programs, in these buckets. And as a result, there's not the same kind of competition for those limited state dollars. These programs kind of have a free ride because nobody pays attention because, gosh, that money can't be used to fund education. It can't be used to fund the troopers. So as a result, they're kind of off the table, off budget in a way, but instead should be available to help fund highest and best services. So then there's another practice called designated reserves. And so this is when we get into some big money, $2.8 billion that are set aside, politically designated for certain purposes. And you can see here, certainly public education fund, this is the forward funding of education. It's not to say that that money would be used for something other than education, but the legislature has set it aside to save and pledge it towards education. But in addition to that, there's like the PCE Power Cost Equalization Endowment. That program costs about $40 million a year, but yet the legislature, when it had a lot of money, has set aside $900 million in an endowment so that that program can be on automatic funding each year. Is that the highest and best use of limited state dollars to have that $900 million in a savings account so that it can be used just for that program? Takes away the competition for those dollars. The other one is the $443 million, which is the Alaska Scholars Program. Again, not disparaging that it's a good program, but should the $11 million it costs each year be up for competition along with the money that's needed to pay troopers, to pay VPSOs, to keep the jails open, et cetera. So again, these are sort of like politically prioritized by past legislatures. Is it appropriate now, given the limited revenue available for core services, should we continue this practice, which has built these fences, made these buckets that are protecting these certain programs' funding? So our recommendation here is that all current revenue should be put on the table so that all programs compete for those dollars, unless there is some legal restriction that doesn't allow that to happen. So then in terms of, again, spending, we also looked at how can we communicate to Alaskans that there is value for the dollars being spent. Is the state getting a bang for its buck that's being spent? And so this is about shifting the focus of budgeting from the current practice of doing, you know, incremental change from one year to the next. You know, this program's funding goes up $100,000, and we're going to talk about that $100,000, but we're not going to talk about the $5 million that it already has. And so that's been the practice. You know, when you have a lot of money, you can do that, but it's important to look at what that $5 million is buying in terms of effective services. So the study group talked about what would you want to know. So, you know, is it a constitutional requirement? Is this service necessary per the Constitution? If so, how effective is it? Does it get the results that it was created, for which it was created? What's the cost to deliver those services? Could have a great program doing great things, but its costs are way out of a reasonable realm. And is the state the only entity that can deliver these services? And this is where you get into the idea of contracting out with third parties or divesting yourself through privatization. But again, other ways of making sure the services continue, but perhaps at a less cost and the same level of effectiveness. So to that end, we recommended that the legislature undertake a review that examines all the programs, all the services, within a framework similar to what was outlined on those questions. And then report to the citizens and use this data about the effectiveness of programs to help inform the budget decision making. And the idea here is that with this information, if citizens could see the effectiveness of programs, they'd be more likely to want to continue them if they're doing good things. And then if we don't have enough revenues, then it may be time to look at the revenue side. But again, having this informed decision-making would be very beneficial. And I would say that the House has been trying to do this. House Finance Committee has been trying to use performance measures in its work, and which is greatly appreciated, but it does take a lot of time. And we'll get to another couple of recommendations on that point. So Eric's going to speak to the next couple of recommendations, and I'll be back.
One of our recommendations had to do with a management review. Doesn't sound like a very interesting topic, unless you are aware of the fact that we've had two since statehood, one initiated by Governor Hammond, that's a few years back, and the other initiated by Governor Hickel. This is when citizens from Anchorage, Fairbanks, other places, experts, CPAs and others, looked at state government operations to see what management efficiencies could be affected. I think it's a very important thing for the legislature to undertake and for the administration to adopt. Look at our state government operations like private corporations. See if we're delivering services in the most efficient way. See where there's redundancies. See where we're doing things that we no longer need to do. Towards the end of a more efficient state government at lesser cost. Cost efficiencies don't seem to have been a priority in Alaska for a long time. Now they're going to have to be. So we recommend that the governor establish a citizen-led committee to undertake that management review. That the governor could do, that committee could operate over a 3 or 6 month period, and I think produce suggestions of real value for the more efficient and cost effective operation of our state government. There are, of course, huge implementation hurdles to adopting any program that affects cost savings in state or federal government. And we know that each and every suggestion we make will to a lesser or greater extent, be countered by a powerful spending lobby. The federal government has met this, of course, in base closing procedures, and we recommend consideration of a process similar to base closing procedures to affect and implement a package of recommendations that would resize state programs. This has the benefit of taking it away from the specific onus of legislators, putting it in at a citizen level, and letting those people make suggestions which can affect real reform. Even more important, it seems to me, is engaging Alaskans in the whole process of downsizing and streamlining and making cost-effective our state government. Those of you, and there are many of you in this room that have been around the 30, 40, and even 50 years that some of us have, know that there have been some half a dozen attempts over the years, most recently in Fairbanks 11 years ago, to grapple with questions of state budget and fiscal future. We need to restart such a process, and the process needs to be restarted with the full support of both the governor and the legislature. There has been no more important time in our state's fiscal status than today, looking forward the next several years. It seems to me Alaskans would wish to engage in a dialogue on how they can become knowledgeable about our state budgets and about revenue sources. And it's important that they become engaged before they're become willing to accept solutions. The kind of dialogue I'm talking about would be dialogue from citizenry. It would be dialogue which would be apolitical, not based on a party agenda or otherwise, but solely on the fiscal future of the state. There never has been a more appropriate time to do it. It should be initiated now after careful planning and only with the full support of the legislature and the governor. Each of the last efforts has failed, although two of the last efforts have found favor and been adopted by the House, but each have failed of final legislative enactment because, frankly, of a legislative look-and-see attitude as to their result, rather than full legislative support for what the deliberations involve. So that's an important aspect of our report, to engage in Alaskans, and that should be co-sponsored, as I say, by the governor and the legislature.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Commonwealth North's Eric Wolforth and Cheryl Frasca. As study group co-chairs, they presented Commonwealth North's 2015 report entitled The State's Operating Budget, Critical Crossroads, Choices, and Opportunities. This talk was recorded at the Hilton Anchorage on February 25th, the same day the report was released. Commonwealth North President Marianne Pease moderated the discussion. Cheryl Frasca was next to speak.
And some of you, in terms of the Engage Alaskans piece of this, some of you in this room may have participated in the dialogues that we did here in Anchorage on the city's budget and the challenges it was facing. And the good news is participants, they all had a survey they completed before they left, and they really found that it was a well worth their time. They spent the 3 hours learning about the city finances and also having the opportunity to provide their input to those that would be making decisions. So it can be a really very constructive process for both citizens as well as the elected officials. So now the other piece of the budget works, the study group looked at some of the practices, the budget practices that are deployed and how they might be changed to better provide more time and more deliberation. And so the first recommendation here is that on the budget, on the governor's side, one of the interesting aspects is that there is no opportunity for public input into the budget, the governor's development of the budget he ultimately proposes to the legislature. So the recommendation here is to do what has happened in some other states, like Oregon, to provide an opportunity for citizen panels to serve as advisors in his development of, or her development of the budget. And one of the interesting things that happened in Oregon is that the departments got really anxious because these citizens were getting to have a say in the governor's budget, and they wanted to make certain that the departments would have an opportunity to refute, give more information about what citizens had to say. So they did adjust their process a little bit, but always that dynamic of the spending lobby. And that we also recommend that the governor move up submission of the budget to November 15th instead of the current December 15th. And this is in order to give the legislature more time to examine what's being proposed. And that ties into this idea of, on the legislative side, that the legislature establish a revenue limit, a limit on how much of the savings it's going to use in any one year. And they do this early in the legislative session. Our idea is that we'll recommend that there be a Ways and Means Committee, but that the Ways and Means Committee would see the budget in November. It would also mean that the revenue forecast would get moved up too, but they would take that information, they would develop a resolution that would be introduced when the session started that would lay out the parameters of the revenues that would be available, legislatively determined available for the upcoming budget that the session would be working on. And so that would help in a sort of a subtle way. If everybody's committed to it, they pass the resolution, hopefully that would deter some of the last minute end of session wrangling that often drives up spending. We also recommend that all of the savings, we have two savings accounts, the constitutional budget reserve and then the statutory budget reserve. The challenge with the constitutional budget reserve is that when they want to spend more than they spent the last year, it requires a 3/4 vote to gain access to that reserve fund. That won't be a problem this year, but typically it has been a problem, and those people that hold back their votes, you know, that other 1/4, they have a lot of leverage, and as a result, a lot of projects get funded that may otherwise not have been. So the unintended consequence is that spending goes up. And so our recommendation is, well, stop it, put that money into the statutory budget reserve fund that only requires a majority vote to gain access to. So another budget practices I mentioned was about creating the Ways and Means Committee. And again, its purpose initially would be to establish the revenue limit, how much a resolution that describes how much revenues would be available for the upcoming year's budget. Our recommendation would be a joint committee. Some of you may remember that in recent years, the legislature, they tried this, but the Senate, we have a theme going on here, I realize, that the Senate didn't want to play, and so the House had a Ways and Means Committee only, and it looked at revenues and other topics like that. So our recommendation here is that it be a joint committee that does the revenue limit work, as well as it could review the revenue forecasting methodology in terms of its reliability. There's been recent changes, and time will tell if it's improved the forecast reliability. And certainly, as time goes on, they can look at new revenues, the choices and trade-offs involved in those, and the economic impact of changes. So another budget practice related recommendation concerns the length of the session. If any of you have been down to Juneau, they just are rushing from one meeting to the next. They really don't have time, especially in an era when they have such formidable decisions to be made. And so that was a constant discussion point in our study group about what can they do to give themselves some more time. So we recommend that they go back to the constitutional 120-day session instead of their current 90 days. That they also increase their, what I would call real work during the interim, especially if you're a member of the finance committee, so that that's when they could work with the administration to do the review of the performance of different programs. And if necessary, have special sessions devoted to the budget work. And because of the, you know, challenge that we are facing right now. And then the other is to implement a contingency plan when you have a dramatic drop in revenues from what you approved for the budget for a current year. To be real candid, I'm just surprised, at least maybe I've missed it, but I haven't heard about steps that the administration has taken to slow down current year spending. Because what you save this year is then available in revenues to help with next year's budget. So, but I don't think that's taken place, but we recommend that there be a plan developed so, and triggers for that plan should this continue to occur. So, and then finally, almost finally, in the meantime, you know, buy some time for the legislature and the administration to work through this difficult review, this careful review that needs to take place. And, you know, the legislature, their real power is the power of appropriation. And limiting the appropriation that a executive branch gets. So what this recommendation is that basically the legislature would approve a budget for next year that short funds government. So say it provides 7 months worth of funding. And that will then allow the legislature and the administration to work through the next 7 months. That would take you to next February. Hopefully they do this before. But they would work on what are the changes that will be necessary in order to resize or right-size government services. Then the administration would come back to the legislature for its approval of the rest of the year's budget and or other statutory or legal changes that would be necessary in order to deploy these changes. And then another tool that could help the administration would be, now this is really the technical part of budgeting, but you know, it's giving flexibility, maximum flexibility to each department on how it uses its funds. Right now, the power of the legislature is to can tie the hands of a department by giving it lots of appropriations. Okay, because a department can't move money between appropriations. So if you gave the Department of Health and Social Services one appropriation, that then it had the latitude to spend that money throughout the programs, it could give them the kind of management flexibility to make changes that they don't know about today or next month. And so again, it's still, the legislature has the power of appropriation, but it's giving management flexibility to the administration to start to make and implement the kinds of changes that they believe will be necessary. And then finally, not to be naive here, because we know this is a political process. And I did have the chance to talk, I was down in Juneau a couple weeks ago and I talked with some folks about some of the ideas that we've been working on. And you know, one of those senators said, well, you know, good ideas, but it's just those politics. And so we know that and we appreciate that, but we really believe that this time, that fiscal cliff, Scott Goldsmith, we're at it. And it's very different, dramatically higher operating budget, recurring obligations, lowest oil production since we've produced oil, but we have sizable savings. So we have a mixture of tools that can be available, but it is going to require really thoughtful, deliberative, hard work to make good decisions that ensure we have a stable economy and we're able to get our budget and our state to a level that we can continue to afford the kind of future we want to see. So we're not naive about this. We know it's really easy to talk about what other people ought to do, and we appreciate that, but they're going to have to do it. And so that's why we offer these ideas and recommendations, and no doubt we'll have some more work to do on another study group topic. And I look forward to it, but I don't know. But I also want to thank all the study group participants. And if you're in this room, I know some of you are, please stand up. I want to give you a hand and thank you for your time. You both too. So thank you, and also Eric had mentioned the presenters that we have, and also to Jim and Aaron for sticking with us throughout this whole process, Commonwealth North staff, and then finally to Northrim Bank. We greatly do appreciate your support. So thank you. We have time for questions.
Yes. Yes.
So we didn't do that spiel. Are there the thing, little papers on the table?
I don't think there are.
Well, then it's a small room. You can stand up if you want to be accountable. Yes. I didn't mean it like that. It wasn't, Julie.
Two questions, and if you don't have the answer, that's fine. Is your GRAP idea and the citizen advisory panels for the governor the same group, or how are they similar or different, and how would that be managed? And then what's the process for actually getting money out of the constitutional budget reserve and put it in the statutory? Like, is that even possible in a political climate?
Those are three questions. Okay. They're different. The BRAC process would be, you could have citizens, you could have departments, somebody else come up with the ideas. They present them to the governor. Then if it's modeled after BRAC, then the governor could make changes, and then he would submit them to the legislature. And then the legislature would have a certain period of time, I think at the federal level it's 45 days, to disapprove of the recommendations. So it would take an action to disapprove. So if they do nothing, then it's approved. So it's kind of it's a backwards way of getting something done. So then the citizens being involved in recommendations to the governor, different, you know, just citizen panels, advisors. Also, we had some other ideas about ways to engage citizens. Also in the reviews that we hope the legislature, House Finance, Senate Finance will do in reviewing performance of programs. Also engage citizens in that. Not stakeholders necessarily, people who benefit from the program, but bring in different perspectives from business perspectives in reviewing these kinds of activities. So that's a different kind of process. And the third one was, oh, yeah. Well, in theory, because spending is less than, well, that might be a take a legal definition. You know, from a layperson, you're spending less, you're moving it from one savings account to another savings account. Seems like it should be a majority vote. But I'm sure somebody will say, but wait a minute, you know. So.
And this is great. While Cheryl was answering that question, I allowed Eric to cherry pick which question he wanted. So, Eric, for you, how do you propose to cut the budget by $3 to $4 billion, or $5 billion, or whatever amount will be realistic given the revenue streams? And also, what types of cuts of, you know, in terms of their scale, our options, and just basically kind of outline what your thoughts are there.
You cherry picked that one?
Yeah, well, you see the one you're getting.
That was the easy question?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have specifics for cuts of $3 to $5 billion. What I have is a thought that we as citizenry of a state, which we all love, many of us have been here many, many years before there was a permanent fund, before even statehood, get some of this sense of ownership of our state back towards meeting the problem in an intelligent and effective way. This report was an example, it seems to me, of a citizenry start, a group of people spending quite a lot of time over a four-month period, really digging into a state budget that's grown way too fat for recurring revenues. I mean, we're all part of it. There's no bad actors here. We're simply in a situation where we've grown to spend too much money. And we need now to look at efficiencies, and those are outlined in the report. We need to look at engagement of the citizenry in a real-time basis, both in the committees that Cheryl has mentioned, as well as in management review systems. We need to look at, and the report will talk about, a far better communication from the state government to the citizenry as to budget issues, We get, for example, a state report on our income and expenditures once a year, late, 6.5 months after the year is over, 500 pages. This isn't designed for citizenry involvement. So basically, there's a whole panoply of issues and things, but what we need, frankly, is a new attitude of citizen involvement and interest in getting our state on a proper financial basis.
All right, Cheryl. With the recent announcement by Governor Walker of the expanded scope of the ASAP, or the in-state pipeline, and the AKLNG project, kind of both mega projects now in terms of the vision, what is the budgeted cost of Alaska's participation in both projects? Should that expense be on the table as well, or part of the dialogue? Thank you.
Yeah, right. I have no idea about how much is budgeted and how they budgeted. My guess would be is that it was a capital appropriation, which means it's not even part of what we all were talking about here, because there's the capital budget. All right. So they probably appropriated monies for the capital budget, and the activities related to that capital project are being funded by that capital appropriation. I'm just guessing, okay, but that's typically the model that's used. And of course, everything should be on the table in terms of the operating budget. The reviews that were done on the transportation projects that the governor, upon coming into office, did, that's really healthy to do that. And then those monies can be available to, if they're appropriate, if they're not federal funds or have restrictions, you know, could be put into the pool, of the bucket of money available to fund highest and best services. But again, though, they're one time in nature. And so what our focus was on those recurring obligations that we have from one year to the next. So.
Okay. What about legislative audit? Has it been successful in reviewing efficiencies, and how could the legislative audit play out in a more effective manner? Oh, Cheryl.
Okay. Actually, a year or two ago, Speaker Chenault passed a law which requires a very in-depth review or audit of each department. The challenge is that it's one department per year. All right. So this last year, 2014, they did the Department of Corrections, and it was to focus on the performance as well as a number of other issues. They hired a consultant through legislative audit. They hired a consultant to prepare the report, which they did. And one of our recommendations in our report, we visited with Representative Chenault staffer about the process, and with the legislative auditor and the staffer assigned to these projects. Our recommendation is that they move up doing more than just one audit per year. Because again, that's information that will help inform the legislature's budget decision making. The one that they did this last year was on the Department of Corrections.
Okay, finally, how is this report going to be distributed to those that have the ability or the desire to take action on it? What will Commonwealth North do to promote this report? And I'm going to start by answering that, because we have already started in terms of our media outreach. And also, Cheryl attended the state chamber meeting in Juneau, where she briefed the state chamber delegation and legislative officials on the release of this report. And I know there are many other steps that we're going to be taking as well to get this valuable piece of information out there to the public. And I'll let Cheryl finalize some of the other thoughts.
Okay, we started at 6:15 a.m. this morning with Channel 2. Who knew people were up and at work at that time? We also, if you have organizations you think that would like to hear this, you know, please let us know. We'll come and talk to them. And we're sending it out to the legislators, the administration, as soon as we're done with our lunch today, so they'll have access to it. But we're available to talk about it, and we'll continue to refine ideas. If you have an idea that you don't see in the report, let us know. We can do an addendum. But we know that this is a topic that's going to be around. It's not like it's over with at the end of this legislative session. So it's going to require diligence as for us as citizens to keep up this external expectation that the legislature and the administration are going to have to deal with this in a responsible way. So we all have our job to do, and we'll lead it with this, but we're all going to have to keep our nose to the grindstone, as they say.
Great, and I would just like to have one more round of applause for Eric and Cheryl and the incredible job that they've done. As you all know, Commonwealth North is a membership-driven organization, and as I look around the room, I see so many familiar faces and so many other great potential participants in some of the good work that we're doing, both with our Energy Action Coalition, our healthcare coalition, fiscal policy, and many of the other study groups that we undertake. And as a matter of fact, we just kind of talked about our March program. And I don't know who asked the question today on the two gas line proposals, but as we thought about what a topic would be that would be most relevant to the recent announcement, we came up with it's really going to be an important forum to have here to discuss the governor's proposal, the AKLNG project, and kind of see where both sides are going in this proposal. Because as we all know, the devil is always in the details, and we are going to be sending out the asks for representatives on both sides of that issue. And I hope you will all look forward to hearing about that at the end of March for a program. And with that, thank you again once more to North Rim Bank, and thank you all for being here today. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Commonwealth North's Eric Wolforth and Cheryl Frasca. As study group co-chairs, they presented Commonwealth North's 2015 report entitled The State's Operating Budget, Critical Crossroads, Choices, and Opportunities. This talk was recorded at the Hilton Anchorage on February 25th, the same day the report was released. Thanks for tuning in with us today for Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.